All right, welcome to North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Mike Grenier at the top of the show. And Mike will be back later on as well, as this is North Shore Sports Night. And Tim Kearns will be with us hopefully later on, as he usually is. And, of course, Bill Proposky is our producer and engineer. So it's kind of all kind of interesting here as I try to figure out...
What's a hodgepodge, right?
Yeah, yeah.
A pot pourri.
There you go. I try to figure it out, Mike. So thanks for being with us, man. I'm going to shut the music off here. So listen, let's get started right away. So much to talk about, and I'll clue everybody in later about the whole show, because we're going to talk hockey, we're going to talk basketball. I got a bunch of high school scores here for this afternoon.
Sure, absolutely.
And you know, we'll have Mike's Power Five later on. But Mike, I guess I want to ask you, and again, thank you for stopping by early in the show. I appreciate it. I want to ask you about your experience this year at the NCAA's, the March Madness, and maybe your thoughts on the entire playoff system, because I'm not a great big fan of college basketball. It's too much for me. It's kind of overwhelming. And I sort of try to tune in, you know, the Final Four. But from all accounts, this was an absolutely wild tournament.
Yeah, I agree, Rick. I mean, having been out in my wife Eileen and I went out to Albany, New York for the first two rounds, and not even dreaming, when the pairings came out on Selection Sunday and we saw that we were not getting any number one or number two seeds coming to Albany, frankly, I was disappointed. I was hoping to see a UCLA or a Kansas or somebody like that. But instead, they dispatched a bunch of teams that are sort of middle of, you know, like the number eight seed, the number nine seed, but fortunately, we got a number four seed in UConn, and lo and behold, they went on and won the whole thing.
There you go.
And we got a number five seed in Miami, and they ended up in the Final Four. So of all the regions, Albany probably ended up being the best, because we got two of the Final Four teams, two of the teams that eventually made the Final Four. Miami, a terrific team coached by Jim Larrañaga, whose son was a Celtics assistant coach for a while. And Larrañaga's always been a great coach. He played at Providence College, and he did a lot with that team this year, because early in the season, no one thought Miami was going to be nearly as good enough to be in, let's say, the top four at the end of the season. Whereas UConn, which always has a great women's team, of course, but has also had a great men's program, certainly under Jim Calhoun, they won some championships. But under Dan Hurley, had a phenomenal season. They were ranked as high as second and fourth during the season, then they had sort of a slump. And it's such a long college season these days, Rick, as you know, it's 35, 36 games. So they were able to have that slump and still get back in the picture and to earn a number four seed. And lo and behold, not only did they win the tournament, but what was impressive to me, Rick, is that they won their six games by a total of 120 points.
Whoa.
Meaning their average win was by 20 points. And even in the final, you know, against San Diego State, which was a surprise team, they won that game by 17. So they actually dominated the tournament, and it was an impressive run by UConn all the way around. They just hammered people. They beat Gonzaga, which is high as number three in the country earlier this year. They beat them by 28 points. So they were really a very deserving winner. UConn was, and the excitement of going, I think, to the early rounds is that there's eight teams when you go to those first two rounds. You're seeing eight different teams from different parts of the country, of course, and you're meeting and seeing fans wearing all the paraphernalia and the gear. Like, for example, we had St. Mary's of California in our bracket in Albany. And, you know, you met people from California wearing St. Mary's gear. There were people from Iona, because Rick Pitino's the coach there. Rick Pitino's team came in. You know, we had VCU, Virginia Commonwealth. You know, we had Miami. We had UConn. And there was contingents of fans from every school, and of course the bands are playing, and it's just a great atmosphere if you love basketball, because you get there, if you're a basketball junkie as I am and as many people are, you get there on a Thursday or a Friday. In our case, the games are on Friday and Sunday. You have a doubleheader on a Friday afternoon, a doubleheader on a Friday night, and then a doubleheader on a Sunday afternoon. Now, it just doesn't get any better than that.
So am I talking with Bob? I thought I called Mike Grenier, but it sounds like Bob Ryan.
Yeah, well, you know, Bob Ryan loves it. I think he never missed the Final Four for a long time. I used to talk to him about that. He used to make it a point to get to every Final Four. And, of course, it used to be held in arenas. And, of course, now it's a gigantic thing, the Final Four, because they hold them in football stadiums. The same place where you're seeing the New England Patriots playing the Super Bowl or the Kansas City Chiefs, sadly,
yeah.
now use those venues are now used for the Final Four. And I think that's taken away some of the charm, of course, of seeing teams like we did in Albany, because in Albany it's a 15,000-seat arena, whereas Houston or wherever the Final Fours are now, it's like 65,000 people. And it certainly loses the intimacy of an arena,
mm-hmm.
you know. So in that respect, yeah, the Final Four has outgrown those arenas, and that's, to me, that's a sad part of it. But the early competition, you know, in those arenas is still as great as it ever was. And next year, we got Boston's going to have a regional final. So therefore, it'll be the round of 16 getting down to the Final Four will be held at the Boston Garden next March.
And you won't have to travel as far.
That's right. Won't have to travel 3 hours out to Albany, New York, where they had, by the way, about 18 inches of snow when we got there, because they had the storm previous 3 or 4 days. And fortunately, the sun came out, but they had a lot of leftover snow the weekend that we were there. But the Boston Garden, of course, would be a great take for local fans who want to participate and are mm-hmm. interested in the NCAA tournament. You have to target those dates at Boston Garden, because the regional, you're really getting down to the top 16, the top 8 teams, and then you're emerging with the Final Four team right out of Boston next year. So that's a great take.
Well, I think it was Bob Ryan who wrote an article, a column recently, about going to a college basketball game, and he was just making the point there. It's just the most amazing fun he's had, you know, watching a sporting event. And I'm amazed, Mike, because I cold called you just a few minutes ago because Tim can't make it right now.
Right.
And you said, I'm going to go get my notes, meaning about the Celtics. And here you are, a walking encyclopedia with no notes in front of you. And it just, I think it just reinforces your love for the game, and I think that's just cool, really cool.
Well, you know, I think over the years, and I think it would just not just be Bob Ryan, but a lot of our North Shore coaches and basketball fraternity over the years, when the first two rounds of the tournament were held in places like Providence, Rhode Island, or the DCU Center, the old Worcester Centrum, or Hartford, or Boston, and you'd see the basketball, winter basketball fraternity at the games. You know, you'd go to the Worcester Centrum for the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament, and you'd see the Newburyport coach that you dealt with all winter. You'd see the Marblehead coach. You'd see the Salem High School
yeah,
coach.
Yeah.
See the Bishop Fenwick coach, the St. John's Prep coaches. It's a great thing. As a matter of fact, in Albany, we ran into two kids wearing Bishop Fenwick jackets, Bishop Fenwick of Peabody, and they were like high school kids experiencing the NCAA tournament for the first time, and we stopped them in the corridor and talked about it a little bit, and I said to them, "You're going to love this. It's your first time seeing this. You're going to love this." And they couldn't believe they were running into an old Salem News sports writer, you know, who's been to many of these things. So you still see local people at these tournaments, no matter where they're held.
That is awesome. All right, Mike, we got Gary Larrabee coming up at the bottom of the hour here. He's going to come back to us and talk about the Masters. And so we'll check in with you right after that, once again, during North Shore Sports Night.
We'll be ready, and we'll be talking about the Celtics and the playoffs, and who the heck are they going to play? We'll find out Tuesday night.
Or if we're going to get your best guest, too.
That's right.
All right, Mike, talk to you in a little while.
You tell Larrabee I said hello.
I certainly will.
All right, thanks.
All right, thanks, Mike. Okay, that's Mike Grenier, who is our basketball insider, and just an amazing, amazing talent and a great man, great guy. He'll be back right after we talk with Gary Larrabee later on. Tim Kearns is hoping to be with us if he can possibly make it, because Tim, one of his passions is the Masters, of course, and he watches it with a keen eye, and I know that he would love to talk to Gary about it, and looking forward to having Gary back on. It's been a while. I think we talked with him since October. He's kind of semi-retired now, but sports historian and golf writer. Coming up, we've got our hockey insider. He's an NHL agent. He's the Winthrop High School hockey coach, Dale Dunbar, who's been kind enough to drop by this time of year, the past several years, and talk a little pro hockey for us and give us his comments on the Bruins, which have been so exciting for old-timers like myself. It's been amazing. So we'll come right back. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore. Please stay with us.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Hi, we are now back with Dale Dunbar, a familiar voice here in MSO and familiar to just about every hockey fan on the North Shore. And Coach, welcome back to North Shore Sports Night as we are live here. Tim is not available right now, so you just got me, but how are things going? How are you doing?
Everything's going great. Just enjoying this nice weather, and hopefully the upcoming weather will be beautiful. And it's playoff season when the weather turns, you know. It's nice.
Just waiting for, I got to make sure my lawnmower will work. This stuff is turning green already. Coach, I got to ask you this, man. We talked in an interview last week, and you mentioned Boston Talk Radio, and it was the weirdest thing because the two hosts on one of those stations were talking. They were kind of dissing Jim Montgomery along with David Pastrnak, and they were giving their words of wisdom because they've coached so many games and at so many levels. About how Pastrnak was being misused, he turns the puck over too much. He doesn't back check and blah blah blah. And you said you had heard him on Friday, as you and I were talking on Monday or Tuesday. Well, I turned the radio on the next day, and Coach, they were still saying the same thing.
Yeah, they do it. They must sell. I must sell yeah. ads. Everybody loves bad things. I don't know. I mean. Right now, how can you say Pastrnak's not the NHL MVP? He's four goals behind McDavid. But look what he's done. They're on a record-setting team. He's scoring a bulk of the goals, setting all-time records. He hasn't taken any time off. Everybody else has. I mean, this kid is the MVP of the league in my eyes. I mean, he's just really the goals he's scoring and the timing of the goals and what they mean. I mean, for me, Pastrnak's the MVP of the league.
I think he's one of the top two game-winning goal scorers in the league, if he's not number one. And
right.
Let me ask you, Coach, about his... Well, first of all, last night, they had six starters not playing, and
right.
the check line was, without Krejci, by the way, was incredible. And Pastrnak just kind of... they used the word stepping up, but, man, he just kind of took it over.
Well, that team just doesn't miss a beat. They have so much depth. And when you're committed to, like I said before, all three zones on both sides of the puck, I mean, they don't give you any time. They just don't give you any time to make plays. And, now once you plug those guys back in, I mean, there's going to be no time and space. They're great on the penalty kill right now. I think they've killed off their last 36 or 4, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Mind-boggling. The power play is now coming back at the right time. But they're just so deep. And if you don't have goaltending, mm-hmm. you're not going to go far. I don't care how skilled you are. If you have to try to win games 6-5 in the playoffs, you're not going to be successful.
I don't know if
you're able to shut down and win those 2-1, 3-2 games. And, you know, both goalies are giving this team a chance to win 95% of the time in the third period. That's all you can ask.
Yeah, they've dominated in the third period. I don't know if you saw the game last night, Dale, but, Orloff and McAvoy not playing on defense. And,
right.
And they still, I mean, as you say, they just don't miss a beat. How the hell do they do it? What do you see, from the defensemen, that maybe, a fan like myself who doesn't know hockey, what do you see from the defense on this team in terms of, what they do that I might not see? Because I know they rotate five or six guys and they're so strong, they win a lot of 2-1 games.
Yeah, and they have poise with the puck. You know, they really, they move the puck well. Good teams don't spend a lot of time in their own zone. You know, they're pushing pucks up ice as quickly as possible. And Montgomery, which is, you know, a breath of fresh air to these guys, you know, Montgomery preaches all his D to join the rush. Past coaches didn't do that. You know, mm-hmm. it was like, just get into the foes and then, you know, just get up. These guys were pressuring down low. They're keeping pucks alive. They're putting a lot of pucks on net for, you know, for their goals. but I think they spend minimal amount of time in their ice. They're all very good skating defensemen, and they're able to, you know, their escapability on the forecheck is amazing, how they get away from the forecheck, then they kick it up, and then they're jumping. I mean, look at the added pieces of Orlov and, you know, Lundholm and all those guys, and now you got McAvoy, you got Grizz, you got, you know, even Carlo to an extent. All these guys are jumping up in the play, and they're keeping, you know, it's a very difficult thing to defend when all five guys are joining in and you know, joining the offense. It's pretty difficult.
You know, I know you coach clinics and things like that, and I'm wondering, you mentioned Orlov. At that level, how difficult is it for a guy who's played, you know, so many years in one team with one system to go in and then step onto the ice with a brand new team? And I know from all accounts that the Bruins welcomed the new guys, you know, without question. But what's the transition like going from one team to another, one coaching style to another? How does a pro do that?
You know, sometimes it's great for a player to get another coaching style, to hear another voice.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, you know, if he's tailoring your game to the style of the game that they want to play, which is, you know, high pace, you know, foot on the gas. They want to be attack mode. And when the puck's turned over, they're all defending. So it's a total team commitment what they're doing. But when you have defensemen that can handle a puck like these guys and have heavy shots from the point, you know, that's tough to beat. And coming from Washington, you know, I mean, he's played under three or four coaches probably in the last 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that can be tough, but his game is all about pace. It's about jumping. It's about offense. He defends well. But you know, these guys, it can be a breath of fresh air. It's like taking the shackles off and saying, hey, just go, run. And they're doing that. And, you know, I mean, you watch some of the plays these guys make down low, the passes, the tight area passes. You know, this Ben Pasternak got for one-timers with passes that are unbelievable.
Yeah.
And his shot is ridiculous. These goaltenders have no chance to get across on him. But again, it's a fun team to watch because I think Bergeron's the classiest, you know, player in sports, mm-hmm. not just hockey. This kid is just amazing, when you talk about the respect he has from his teammates and even guys around the league, you have that guy beating the drum every day in the right ways and getting guys going. The chemistry outweighs the talent. There are more talented teams out there right now, but there's not more committed teams to their process and what they stick to. They don't vary, no matter what happens. They don't get away from what their game plans are, and I think that's the key. They don't panic. You can't panic in the playoffs. You just can't. They have all the right pieces. They have guys. Their checkers are scoring, which is unbelievable. And their scorers are checking. So when you have that, you know, you've got some major, you know, components in place to go all the way.
Well, one of his teammates said that, Bergeron is the perfect human being, and I think a lot of people echo that. But he's you know, as a long time Boston sports fan, it's just so great to see guys. You know, you mentioned Bork last week, but it's so great to see guys like it. I remember when Brad Park came over from the Rangers; he was hated, but man, did he fit into this community and fit in as a Bruin. And it's just cool to see. Let's transition to offense for a second, Coach. Bobby Jackson, former coach over at Marblehead, taught me about position. Body position when you're shooting, you know, for high schoolers. These guys, certainly Pasternak is always in position, but they're scoring from all over the ice, and they're also getting the dirty goals, too. They're not afraid to go in and mix it up.
Oh, no, they have, you know, I love the kid, Frederick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kid, oh, my God, his name's escaping me right now, the kid that came over from Washington with Olaf from Maine.
Hathaway?
Yeah, Hathaway,
yep.
You know, big heavy body, gets a PC every shift, you know, when he's on the ice. And that makes a big difference to the opposing defenseman. When you know who's on the ice and they're always coming and they're always finishing their checks. It changes the way you play the game. You get rid of that puck maybe a little early than you normally would.
Mm-hmm.
But these guys, you know, they're smart back there. They hold the blue line well. They don't give up many odd man rushes. But the way they keep pucks alive and get those shots on net, that's what creates everything down low below the dots. And, you know, and the way they can find the soft areas and move to a position where they're going to get the puck and get it right off. You know, that hockey sense that they have on the back end is just ridiculous.
You mentioned chemistry, Coach, and as a high school coach, what does that mean? I want to go back to high school for a second because, you know, as a math teacher, as I said before, sometimes I get classes that they're just great. I never want the year to end. Other times it's a struggle and I can't wait for a break. But in your years at Winthrop, the consistency that you've had, how is the chemistry built? Because it's got to start, I guess it's got to start with you and your system.
Well, I think, you know, you need to set a culture, a standard, and never get away from it. Whatever you're going to do, don't change.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we coach hard. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, I'm not going to pat a kid on the back if he doesn't deserve it. And if he does, I'm going to make sure he knows it. You know, great job. But, you know, you're constantly teaching life lessons. And then you don't fool kids. They know.
Yeah.
And as long as you stick to your standard, you know, and your culture and you do things fairly, you know, you can coach back there and keep the group. And, you know, the hardest thing is when you lose the group. I mean, you lose a couple of key guys, they don't believe in it, whatever, you know, you're done. And that's why you always have to be one step ahead of them. You have to keep things light at times.
Yep.
Don't be predictable. But just to echo your sentiments you just said, I mean, I'm the same way. This year was the greatest year.
Yeah.
Best group I've ever coached. I couldn't wait to get to the rink. And there have been years that, hey, let's face it, there are guys that disrupts the chemistry, or, you know, they think they deserve more, or they're not pulling their weight and they're getting exposed. You know, different factors can eat into your chemistry. The team I had this year was incredible, from the leadership group to, you know, open door policies. I mean, we sat there, we talked about many things on and off the ice.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, I used to really, you know, use the Bruins as the barometer. I said, boys, we're the same team. We are the exact same team. So stick together, thick and thin, no matter what happens out there, just have each other's backs. And we won a lot of games coming from behind because of that. I could, you know, any coach can figure out a defense to shut you down. But when you have chemistry and you have guys that just work through it and keep going and don't quit and are hard on pucks and hard on the body and everything's for the cause, who cares about the points? That's a team that's going to be very tough to beat. And for me, that's what Boston's all about.
All right. Now, the Bruins, I don't know, in my lifetime, I never thought that they would, compete with the 70, 71, 72, 73 Bruins. And these guys, to me, it's like, they're just, I don't see any weaknesses. What do you see that they could do better?
Oh boy, not much. I mean, not much. I think right now they, I think they were having some lulls maybe in the second period, or even recently, maybe a little bit, not of a fast start, you know, but that, hey, listen, we're in game, 79, 80, whatever. It's mm-hmm. a long, long grind.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys have just really have done a masterful job. And I think what the coaches have done and how they're building in the rest days and how they're just approaching everything. They're just one step ahead of everything right now. And, you know, you've got to really, really tip your hat to Montgomery and Sacco and Kelly and those guys, because when you have the year of your team, you're out there spending the time with them. You're doing all the little things to get better. You're taking away all the guesswork. You're making sure you're doing all the small things. You know, that really goes to heart. And, you know, these players know that their coaches are right with them. They're supporting them. you know, and when you have that, it, like I said before, it's tough to beat. It's very tough to beat. So no matter who's in that lineup, you know, everybody's doing their, just do your own job. Just do your job, do it to the best of your ability, and let's just, you know, they really believe they can win every game, and let's face it, show them they can.
They just about have.
It's crazy.
You always talk, and this will be the last thing, I guess, Dale, you talk in a positive way all the time, every time we talk about things, and I got to ask you about Marshawn, because, or Marshan, however you pronounce his last name. To, you know, he's not scoring. Last year, he's one of the top scorers in the league. But when I watch his play, again, I don't see a let up. To me, he looks like he's doing everything you're supposed to do, you know, in the three zones, but he's not scoring. Is this a sort of maybe just a slump that great players go through?
Oh, yeah, definitely. He's a selfless player. I mean, he's all about his teammates. I love his interaction with you know, Bergeron and all his team. They love him, and, you know, he'll do. He plays, I don't know if there's a player in the game that plays his role better to a T. You know, if he's an agitator, he'll get you off your game. He's the guy you'll love to hate, but at the end of the day, he's going to bury some beautiful goals on you. He's tenacious. He's not about points. He's not about his own. Yeah, he's slumping, but at the same time, he's doing everything else
pretty
well.
Right. Well,
and that's all you can ask, because that shows how well-rounded he is. You know, he's hot on the puck. He'll dive in front of shots. He'll do whatever it takes to win. And again, that's the culture that has been set. And when Bergeron's doing it, and your best players are doing it, and he's doing it, that just trickles down to everybody else. Well, so even though he's not scoring, he's doing, and the things that don't show up on the score sheet, he's really chipping pucks out, taking face washes, getting to the net, creating all those dirty area chances. So it's only a matter of time before, you know, it clicks back in, and he'll be throwing pucks to the net and, you know, getting them behind the goaltender. So I wouldn't worry about him at all. I think as the series go on, he's going to be the guy that you're once again depending on to do some big things out there to help you win.
How important is passing? Because it seems to me he's one of the best passers I've ever seen.
He's a very good passer. You know, he'll find you. He very rarely turns the puck over, and when he does, it's usually to try to make a play that maybe some guys wouldn't even try to make. But at the same time, yeah, he can dish it. And he's always in the area to get it back. He's very, very smart with the puck. He's very smart with the puck.
Good point.
And he's very good defensively as well. So, you know, again, he's the guy that, you know, I admire a lot. I admire him more now because of how I've seen him interact with kids and the charity work. And, you know, that goes a long way. That goes a long way into really admiring somebody, not just what they're doing on the ice, but he's outstanding off the ice. And I think, again, the Bergerons, the Krejcis, the Marchands, you can go right down the list of class acts they have on this team. And I think that's where Donnie Sweeney and Cam have done a masterful job. You know, you can critique maybe some of the draft picks, but you cannot critique them as far as fitting the pieces of the puzzle in for this team, because everybody that they've brought in, from Bertuzzi to Lundholm to Orlov to Hathaway to, you know, these pieces have fit seamlessly, and not just on the ice, but you watch them off the ice and how they interact with each other in the locker room. These guys that have come over just can't believe the culture that they came to, and that's what's going to help them win.
Absolutely. It's awesome, and we're lucky to have it.
Oh, that's tremendous. That's, Donnie's done a masterful job.
Coach, thanks for your insight once again, and I'm going to bug you. Let's hope they go all the way, but in the meantime, be well.
Yeah, you too.
All right, Dale, thank you so much.
Take care.
That is Dale Dunbar, who is an NHL agent and Winthrop High School hockey coach, and lucky to have him as our hockey insider. We'll take a break, and we're going to come up talk some golf with Gary Larrabee in just a second here. This is North Shore Sports Night on MSO News Sports. MSO Sports, giving voice to the North Shore.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right. Great to have Gary Larrabee back now. And, Gary, oh, man, long time no talking. Tim is not available right now. I don't know if he's going to be able to join us. But how are you, my man?
Well, I'm great. I don't mind being your third choice when you couldn't get Jim Nance or Jack Nicklaus or Arnold Palmer. Maybe the fourth choice for tonight. Glad to fill in any way I can. You know that, Rick.
Oh, God, yes. It's so great to talk with you again. And I only did a kind of one eye on the Masters in particular, you know, the Tiger Woods saga, the weather saga, and so on. But I don't know what to, bring me through this thing and how you saw it. Maybe what you saw, your prognostication was, and how that kind of turned out.
Well, what they said that they could never have a mountain man win the Masters. Well, a mountain man did win the Masters yesterday.
Did you predict that?
No, I thought Koepka would win, but I also had Morikawa and Hovland at the top, but they all gave it a shot. But John Rahm was obviously clearly the best player in the field. He wins by four shots.
Mm-hmm.
He overtakes. He outplays Brooks Koepka by six shots in the last round, going head to head in the final twosome when he began the day two shots behind Koepka. And John Rahm is a worthy champion. He's now won two majors. He won the U.S. Open 2 years ago. And he's a viable choice to win all four majors this year.
Wow.
I know we will not have Tiger Woods winning a major this year.
No. What was the effect? Have you ever seen anything like that last day? I mean, what, 30 holes of golf and the last day of the Masters, and that's a marathon.
It is, but I think they're all used to it. They can play 36 holes when they have to, and they've played 27 or 30 holes in the final day of a major before. The fact is they won up finish on Sunday. The networks, in this case CBS, doesn't want to have any golf to cover on Monday, even if it's the Masters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in this situation, CBS gets to televise the Masters for like 65 years in a row or something. But in lieu of having to pay a fee to the Masters, which CBS does not, CBS relinquishes a great deal of control of the telecast
mm-hmm.
to Augusta National, which is why you only get 4 minutes of commercials an hour. And they wanted to finish on Sunday, so doggone it, they were going to finish on Sunday, come hell or high water. And, of course, the golfing gods came through with a gorgeous day to play Sunday.
What's Rahm's strength of game? Because I think he was, what, 3 or 4 strokes behind going in on Sunday?
He was 4 shots behind starting on day 3, 2 shots behind starting the final round.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact remains, Rick, and I'm sure you, even you as a non-golfer can notice the fact that John Rahm has the quickest swing of any golfer who's ever won a major championship. And, man, he can hit it a ton
mm-hmm.
with almost like a half swing. He puts so much power into that half or three-quarters swing. And he has a complete game, as he showed yesterday, to win a U.S. Open, not to win the Masters. There's no reason he won't win the PGA next month at Oak Hill, and then possibly the U.S. Open in June at Los Angeles, and maybe the Open Championship over in the,
wow,
across the pond in July.
All right.
One ways to go, but the fact that he won it
mm-hmm.
by such an impressive fashion, beating the whole field by 4 shots after, don't forget, Rick, he four-putted the very first green on Thursday.
Yes, yes. That's amazing. Any surprises, Gary? I mean, I kept one eye on it, and I'm not a golfer, but You know, I was watching the PGA versus LIV. I was watching a little bit of Phil Mickelson, and for an old timer, he finished as a runner up. Any surprises from your point of view?
Well, I think Phil was a big surprise. He hasn't played very well this year on the LIV Tour, just a few tournaments, but for him to shoot 65 the last day and finish second with Koepka was mighty impressive for a 52, 53-year-old. And 12 of the 18 LIV players who were invited to play made the cut, so that wasn't too bad either. Of course, Patrick Reed finished tied for fourth. You know, some of the big shots didn't even make the cut, like Rory McIlroy and Bryson DeChambeau. So I think that was probably the biggest surprise that Phil finished second. Not surprised at all that Tiger was leaking oil big time and was very lucky to make the cut. And then, of course, had to give it up early in the third round when they called off the weather and he decided to not resume on Sunday. I have to impress upon you again, Rick, that the level of arrogance that Tiger Woods continues to display mm-hmm. by thinking he can play just one or two tournaments in a four-month period and only one tournament prior to a major, and then think he can play half-decent or, you know, miraculously he made the cut because his buddy Justin Thomas screwed up the last couple of holes and allowed Tiger to get in. To get into the weekend. Tiger just doesn't have any shame, and his arrogance is beyond imagination. He'll maybe come back and try to play the Open in June, I mean the PGA next month, but last year he skipped the U.S. Open at Brookline, which I thought was a terrible thing for him to do. But, you know, he thinks he can play. He physically can't play it. I don't think he can play mentally, Rick, and
no.
I think we've seen close to the end of Tiger Woods in competition.
It may be like an orange politician that we know who he just needs the crowd. He needs the adulation. He needs to have people worship him. And, you know, maybe think past of who he was. But there certainly could be a classier way for him to go out, I would think.
Well, he'll eventually announce his retirement, and they'll give him a one-year tour of of admiration or adoration or whatever to go around and say goodbye to everybody. That's up to him, but that's just the way Tiger is these days. And good for him that he made the cut. He tied the record for the most consecutive cuts made at 23.
Hmm.
Fred Couples made the cut. He became the oldest player to make the cut at the age of 63, I believe.
Yeah, I saw
Lots of great golf, and it was fun to watch the major. But John Rahm is certainly stand above them all right now, and I won't be surprised if he wins the next three majors.
All right, a couple of quick questions, Gary. First of all, do you know the origin of the green jacket? Because I know different sports have different color jackets, and I have no idea why.
Well, I thought it was a story that before the end of the very first Masters back in 1934, that somehow the brown jacket they were going to give out to the winner somehow was dropped into a huge vat of pea soup.
Okay.
And it became a green jacket rather than a brown jacket.
Yep.
And they thought they should keep it green. It has a little more color than brown. Brown looks more like poop.
Well, that works for me. And finally, Gary, I saw a great article recently, a column that you wrote in the Salem News. I don't know if you want to mention that, because we can. I'll certainly link to it. And we're going to see other columns coming up in the Salem News.
No, that was just a news item, the fact that Frank Deli was elected to the New England PGA Hall of Fame. We have a tremendous honor roll of North Shore PGA players from the New England PGA who have been elected to the New England PGA Hall of Fame. And I think Frank's the first from the North Shore in 5, 6, 7, maybe 8 years, and that's big news. Frank's been a great face for New England PGA golf, and will continue to do so at Kernwood over in Salem. And it's great that Frank's a member of our golf community. And whether you will see any more stories from me during the golf season remains to be seen. It's all about what happens out there. But it was fun to write that story. Thanks
yep.
for mentioning it, and always a pleasure to share time with you. And
all right.
Him.
All right. Hopefully, we can get, grab you before the next, major. And, anytime you want to check in, Gary, God, we're so happy to have you.
If the news cycle, demands it, I will be more than happy to. But thanks for reaching out tonight instead of, Jim Nance, Jack Nicklaus, or Arnold Palmer.
All right. We want to go right to the top. We don't mess around. Thanks, Gary.
Thank you very much.
Be well. Be well. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye. That's Gary Larrabee, golf writer and sports historian, sort of putting the pen away a little bit more now these days. And we all have our thing, and it's just so great. He's always on top. It doesn't make any difference what golf he's talking about. He knows it. All right. One more break. We'll come back with Mike Grenier and resume talking with our basketball insider. This time, we'll focus on the pros. So, again, this is North Shore Sports Night. Don't forget, we have the Salem News sports writers, along with the Gloucester Times sports editor, coming up tomorrow with the podcast hosted by Bill Newell. And also, we have the Sports Desk programs that are dropping on Thursday with Nick Kukuru and Dominic Nicastro, local sports programs, the North Shore Sports Desk and the Merrimack Valley Sports Desk. So be sure to check the website, MSO News Sports, often, if you don't mind, and you'll be entertained and amazed. Who used to say that? I don't know. But anyway, news and sports and entertainment, that's all good stuff here on MSO. So we'll come back with Mike Grenier. We'll take a break. You're listening to MSO News Sports on MSO Newsports.com. Actually, this is North Shore Sports. Now, I get so confused. Anyway, we'll be back.
The North Shore is listening to MSONewsports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, Executive Sports Editor at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
All right, we're right back with Mike Grenier, our basketball insider. And Mike started us off at the top of the show with his reflections on the final, not the Final Four, but the March Madness that took place regionally. And that was pretty good. I didn't realize you saw UConn, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, UConn and Miami, who ended up in the finals.
I know. That's awesome.
Who would have thought that when you go to a certain region, you don't expect two teams to come out of it and end up in the Final Four.
Yeah. Mike, if you don't mind, I got to run through their scores. I forgot to do that, so hang in there, please.
Absolutely.
All right, high school baseball, Ipswich 11, Amesbury 8. These are all finals. Hamilton went them over Danvers 6-1. Marblehead with a big win over Manchester Essex 12-1. Essex Tech shut out Rockport 4-0. In softball, Triton 11, Linfield 1. Georgetown whitewashed Rockport 14-0, and Central Catholic 16-2 over the mighty Peabody Tanners. But Peabody, of course, playing up in their schedule for a strength of schedule. Boys lacrosse, Ipswich 10, Hamilton Wenham 5, Archbishop Williams 17, St. Mary's 10, and girls lacrosse, Ipswich 10, Hamilton Wenham 3. Linfield continues to win, beating Triton 15-7. Beverly squeezed by Marblehead 13-11, and Swampscott 6, Winthrop. Excuse me, Swampscott 9 and Winthrop 6. Those are the scores that we have so far. All right, Mike, let's get to it. Let's start with the most recent game and go backwards or forward, any way you want to do it. But got to start with Peyton Pritchard and the subs against the subs last night.
You know, it's funny, right? Watching that game yesterday was probably the most fun game of the season. That all the starters got to sit out and rest before the playoffs begin on Saturday for the Celtics. And yet, it was a phenomenal opportunity for guys like Sam Hauser and Pritchard in particular. Peyton Pritchard, especially because he's been injured lately, and he got a chance to play 46 minutes yesterday. And he winds up with a triple-double, you know, with the 30 points and the 14 rebounds and the 11 assists. Just a phenomenal all-around game. And Sam Hauser, I believe, matched his career high, which had been established just a few days before with 26 points. And I think he hit 7 or 8 three-pointers. So, for both of those guys, I think the important part of it was that even though it was a meaningless game, they both elevated their game to the point where Joe Mazzulla must be saying, these guys might be valuable to me in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
That was my takeaway from the game, is the fact that, you know, at times Pritchard this year hasn't played much. Mazzulla, he hasn't been in the doghouse. It's just that Mazzulla hasn't found the right opportunities to use him. And then all of a sudden, Pritchard's having some great games, including Sunday's finale. And you got to be thinking at this point, at some point in the playoffs, they're going to need this kid to hit a couple of threes and to scrap and play hard on defense and bring the ball up against certain teams when Marcus Smart needs a rest or Malcolm Brogdon needs a rest or whatever. And the same thing with Sam Hauser. Obviously, the playoffs get sticky on defense, Rick, as we know. Teams play much harder on defense in the playoffs than they do in a regular season. So if you're double-teaming Jaylen Brown or you're double-teaming Jason Tatum and Marcus Smart is having trouble getting into the paint, you have a Sam Hauser wide open in the corner on the wing and can hit a three, that makes the defense think twice, and it'll stretch the defense. So therefore, I'm all for the type of game the Celtics had yesterday as a confidence boost, in particular for those two guys. And I should also mention Mike Muscala, you know, mid-season acquisition, who had 26, I believe, in that game yesterday. And he's a legitimate big man, 6'10", 6'11", who could play a little defense, who could also hit the three-pointer. So if I'm Missoula, I'm thinking this is pretty good situation right now, because you got some guys who can come off the bench for the Celtics in the playoffs and who can certainly enhance the game plan and contribute some meaningful minutes.
All right, and let's go to the Jaylen Brown story.
The Jaylen Brown story, boy, does that get stranger by the day.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, he had that mysterious hand injury. I don't know about you, Rick, but I don't water my plants too often, and I never get near a vase or a vase.
Vase, yeah.
to take some stitches from the broken glass, and it's obviously a strange kind of injury. We've seen these things with athletes over the years, and then all of a sudden they come into the building with a bandage on, and they can't play for a month or two or whatever. Now nobody's saying that about Jaylen Brown. Everybody's saying he's going to be healthy by this weekend. He might even practice late in the week, and the first game, as we should establish right now, that first game is coming up Saturday at 3:30 at the Boston Garden. It'll be either the Atlanta Hawks or the Miami Heat against the Celtics. And Jaylen Brown has to be available. You know, you want him ready from the get-go because he has had a terrific season. He might make All-NBA third team, and that will affect his contract. But there's some strange things that have happened to him the latter part of the season where he's spoken out against Boston's fan base, saying that they don't support him completely. He's been a little bit, could be interpreted as a little bit jealous of Jason Tatum's stardom, although he claims otherwise. But the quotes certainly paint that picture of him. So there's already speculation that he might not be with them, if not next year, he might not be with the Celtics 2 years from now, when he'll get paid handsomely by some team, and it could be the Celtics. Now, at this point, if you're Jaylen Brown, if you want to make your best case for yourself, you've got to have a great playoff series right now. So he should tune out all the outside noise, which included today, by the way. I read that Luka Doncic might come to the Celtics in exchange for Jaylen Brown.
Here we go.
That would have to be the worst-case scenario that I've seen for the Celtics in the last 25 years. Can you imagine, if you know Luka Doncic's game, and no doubting his talent, but he tends to dribble the ball 15, 18, 20 seconds. Can you picture him doing that? And Jason Tatum sitting in the corner waiting for the possibility of a pass? Are you kidding me? I mean, that would be the worst case scenario as the Celtics move forward. So I don't see that happening. I don't think Brad Stevens would let that happen. But it's just one of those rumored trades, again, because Jaylen Brown's name is out there right now among all the trade rumors. So.
The media has to come up with something to sell papers or sell ad time on the radio or whatever. And
absolutely. And I think Jaylen Brown, you've been around 6-7 years now, and you came close to winning it all last year, two games within a championship. And, you know, right now, you know, Jason Tatum's coming off probably his greatest season. Jaylen Brown's coming off his greatest season. And you got Al Horford's had a great season. Peyton Pritchard's coming along. Sam Hauser. Two guys that we have to mention, obviously, who are going to be key to the playoffs. Derek White has had a tremendous season because he's been with, and he's the only Celtics to play all 82 games, Rick.
Wow, okay.
All 82 games, and he had a fantastic season, both offensively and defensively. And, of course, a guy we all love, Malcolm Brogdon, possibly the sixth man of the year in the NBA. He'd be my choice as the sixth man of the year. He averaged 14.9 points. He shot at over 40% on threes. He did everything that you could do to be a winning player for the Celtics. So, you know, they probably have more depth than they did a year ago. I think it's actually, I shouldn't say probably. I think they do have more depth than they did a year ago when they started the playoffs. And, again, Robert Williams' health will be a key along with all that stuff. So let's get ready to roll here because they do have enough talent to win it all. There's no question in my mind. They have the talent to win it all. They have a little experience in the finals. And, you know, Joe Mazzulla has done a really nice job as the rookie coach.
You contrast Malcolm Brogdon's professional attitude and his professionalism with that of Jaylen Brown. And I think we have to factor in the fact that Jaylen Brown is still a very, very young man. And I call it the Kyrie Irving syndrome. And, you know,
yes.
Paul Pierce had that, and he grew out of it. But Malcolm Brogdon is, again, a few years older. Now, he was a starter his whole career, the number one in many teams, if not all the teams he's played on. And he comes over here, and there was already speculation in the media, oh, how's he going to take it, blah, blah, blah. And he's been not only a perfect gentleman, but he's relishing the role. And he said, I love the way his honesty, he said, you know, it's not easy coming off the bench like that for me. But I want to do everything I can. And boy, there's nobody better in the league at doing it. I just, to me, that's old Red Auerbach type Celtic basketball.
Yeah, I agree. He's been the consummate professional. That's what I would call him, because like you said, he could have easily griped and moaned and said, I should be a starter. And there have been times this year when he's played better basketball than Marcus Smart. Okay, let's face it. He's played better ball than Marcus Smart. And if he wanted to make a little noise, he could have said, I should be starting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could be playing more minutes. You know, and Marcus Smart, I give him credit because there was a point about a month ago where he said, I'm not having as great a defensive season as I did a year ago when he was named the Defensive Player of the Year in the NBA. Now, for him to admit that, he's saying, you know, his performance defensively has come up a little short. Other people might not look at it that way, but in his own estimation, he hasn't played as great a defensive role this year as he did a year ago. By the same token, he's still playing very good defense, and, you know, he's contributed enough on offense to still remain a starter. But, you know, Mazzulla could easily switch that out and start Brogdon and sit Smart, but he will not do that because Smart has been around for 8 years now, and he has been the heart and soul of the team in so many ways. He's kind of the rambunctious leader of the Celtics, a physical leader, and in many ways, Jason Tatum still follows his lead. When he sees, you know, Marcus Smart diving on the floor and banging into people and taking a pounding on defense, you know, you got to have Marcus Smart starting. But it's an ideal situation for Mazzulla because Brogdon is ultra professional about his role and is not complaining about his lack of playing time or his lack of starting games. He's got a tremendous sixth man there, and Derek White, of course, is capable of starting as well and has often started several games this year. So, you know, to have those guys as your sixth and seventh men is just fantastic. It's a great boost as they go into the playoffs. And, of course, Grant Williams plays a role in this as well. He's had a much better year as a three-point shooter. He's willing to take anybody on defensively. We just wish that he wouldn't complain so much to the officials because it's cost him some technical fouls this year. And I think in Mazzulla's eyes sometimes, Grant Williams has overdone it, chatting to the officials. And Grant Williams has been benched at times during games because he just can't keep his mouth shut. So Grant Williams can be a big part of this playoff run if he just, you know, basically sticks to his role, which is to rebound, play defense, stick in the occasional three. And he does get in people's faces, so he's going to aggravate the opponent. That's fine. But just don't yap at the officials.
Okay, Power 5.
Power 5. Okay, we're going to go. I think we're going to go. We're going to go with the Philadelphia 76ers at the number 5 spot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And because they've tailed off a little bit, I think Joel Embiid could definitely win the MVP. But I'm going with them with the number 5 spot.
Okay, good. But let me stop you right there. Can the Celtics stop Embiid? Because they sure didn't the other night.
No, they didn't the other night, but the Celtics didn't have a full complement of players. I think it's going to take, similar to when they play Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks, if it gets that far, it's going to take a wall of defenders.
Okay.
I don't think you can guard Embiid one-on-one, whether it's Robert Williams or Horford or Grant Williams. I think you have to set up high. You have to set your defense high up by the foul line or up higher so that Embiid has to go around you, and you can't give him the open shot even from the foul line or the top of the key because he can hit that shot.
Yep.
He can hit the three. It's going to take more than one defender. That means someone dropping off their man, double-teaming Embiid, and Embiid is smart enough. Against the Celtics, he dumped it off to P.J. Tucker in the corner for three straight threes in the fourth quarter that killed the Celtics, you know. So I think it's going to take more than one defender to contain Embiid. So that being said, we're going to go with Philadelphia at the number five spot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with at number four spot, the Memphis Grizzlies, and I'll tell you why. They've got the number two seed in the West, which means they'll have home court against everybody in the West except the Denver Nuggets, who finished first.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about the Memphis Grizzlies is they went 35-6 at home.
Whoa.
Best home record, I believe, in the NBA. That means that if they're playing the Lakers or anybody else, Phoenix Suns, whatever, they're a phenomenal home team, Memphis is, and they would have home court advantage against those teams that finish fourth and fifth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to go with Memphis at the number, four spot.
Yep.
We're going to go with the Denver Nuggets at number three spot. They tailed off at the end of the year. However, Jokic was injured for a few games. And then, of course, now, I'd love to stick the Celtics at number one, but I can't, even though they finished winning 12 of their last 16 games and they're playing great ball right now.
Mm-hmm.
Only because the Milwaukee Bucks had a 19-game winning streak to overtake the Celtics for first place in the latter part of the season. I have to go with the Celtics finishing at my number two spot and the Milwaukee Bucks at the number one spot. So that's the way it plays out. And we'll see what happens come playoff time here, which I can't wait for the playoffs to get started because I think so many potential matchups are going to be really exciting to watch. And, of course, if people don't already know it, the Miami Heat play the Atlanta Hawks Tuesday night, and the winner of that game gets the Celtics on Saturday at the Boston Garden at 3:30 p.m.
Does either one of those teams pose more of a problem to the Celts than the other?
Oh, yeah, there's no question, Rick. In the Miami Heat, of course, ended up as the number one seed last year, and the Celtics beat them in seven games and had to win on the road to do it. Now, the Miami Heat didn't have nearly as good a year this year. They were just 44-38, six games over 500. But Jimmy Butler's playing great ball, and during the regular season, they went 2-2 against the Celtics, which is a little scary.
Right.
One of the games required in overtime, which Miami won, and another game that the Miami won was another close game, whereas the Celtics beat them by 13 and they beat them by 7. Now, the thing about Miami is that they have experience with guys like Adebayo. Jimmy Butler's a tremendous playoff player, even better than the regular season. He's a great player in the postseason. Tyler Hero, very dangerous player at the guard position, can get you 25-30. And Eric Spoelstra, very experienced coach. He's been a championship coach, and of course, he has, needless to say, has far more experience than Joe Mazzulla in big games. So they're a much scarier opponent than the Atlanta Hawks, who the Celtics swept 3-0 in the regular season.
Right.
And of course, yesterday's game almost looked like a G League game or a summer league game because neither team played as starters. But Boston still dominated them in the other two games where the starters did play. So if you're a Celtics fan, I think tomorrow night you're taking out any Atlanta gear that you can find, Atlanta Hawks gear, because you're pulling hard for the Atlanta Hawks against the Miami Heat because they would be a far more, easier opponent for the Celtics to face in the first round than the Miami Heat.
Well, I'm an old St. Louis Hawks fan, so I guess I'll have to do that. So.
Oh, sure.
I love Bob Pettit and Cliff Hagan and those guys, Zell Mulvady.
Played for the St. Louis Hawks and eventually came to the Celtics.
Who did?
Sure did, yeah.
I didn't hear who you said.
No, I said Paul Silas.
Oh, yeah. All right. And finally, Mike, you've been enamored of Memphis all year. I remember way back at the beginning of the season, you were talking about how much fun they were to watch. So I'm going to pencil them in as my dark horse.
Yep. Now, here's the thing about Memphis, too. Of course, I like Memphis for one local reason as well, Scooney Penn of Salem High School, 1995 state champion, who went on to Ohio State, led them to the Final Four in 1999, is an assistant coach with them, and he's done a great job. And I know I text him regularly, and he loves the team that he's helping to coach. And what I like about them, of course, is Ja Morant. If you don't like Ja Morant as a player, despite his off-court activities, you just don't like basketball. But this kid is very exciting. He's electrifying offensive player, point guard. He has incredible athletic skill. And the guy you have to watch out for, Rick, as you watch the Memphis Grizzlies, is Jaren Jackson, who's the team's big man. He is the number one defensive player in the NBA in various categories. Block shots per game, block shots per attempt, field goal percentage by your opposing center. He is a defensive anchor. People don't even know about this guy. And
right.
he can also hit the three-pointer. So that's two good players right there. And then this kid, Bane, is a terrific outside shooter, great three-point shooter. And Dylan Brooks is a good outside shooter. So what they're missing as they head into the postseason, however, is a couple of injuries have taken out two of their better players. Steven Adams, who has been a starter pretty much his whole career, he has a season-ending knee injury. They thought he might be ready for the playoffs, but he's not. And this guy, Clark, who was a backup center, suffered a knee injury about a month or so ago, and he's out for the playoffs. So that takes away a little bit of their potential. However, they're still a threat. They may be too young to win it the entire Western Conference, but if I'm the Denver Nuggets and you're playing them in the East-Western Conference Finals, I'm a little concerned because of their youth, their athleticism, their enthusiasm, and, you know, they want to prove to their fan base and the NBA in general that they're a legitimate contender.
All right. We'll find out more next week, and Mike will be talking after the first playoff game on Monday that the Celtics would have had on Saturday.
That's right, and we'll see how the Celtics do, but you got to be pulling for those Atlanta Hawks.
Okay. All right. Hey, thanks for all your insight tonight, Mike. Really appreciate your help.
Okay, Rick. Take care.
You as well. Okay. That's Mike Grenier, who is a sports journalist, and man, again, the knowledge that just comes out about basketball is so cool. We're going to wrap it up here right now. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget that the Salem News Sports Writers podcast drops tomorrow at 8 a.m. with the Salem News Sports Writers and the Gloucester Times Sports Editor. That's all coming up tomorrow, along with a whole bunch of other stuff. Bill Newell hosting that program. Thank you for being with us. This has been North Shore Sports Night on MSONewsSports.com. Be well and do the right thing.